From the American Tobacco Historic District in downtown Durham, this is Due South on WUNC. I'm Leonita Inge. Despite its universal appeal, the industry of country music has long been focused primarily on white Southern life. But black country music is as old as the genre itself.
The only goal I have for you is in this wedding band. 'Cause all I have to offer you is me.
And so close to my lips the words came, but I almost called your name.
Born to lose, I've lived my
You just heard the voices of country music superstars Charlie Pride, Linda Martell, and even Ray Charles. Later in the hour, we'll hear from two recording artists you may be familiar with, Rhiannon Giddens and Reese Palmer, who are keeping the black cultural tradition in country alive. But first, I'm here with Alice Randall. She's a well-known country music songwriter, the Andrew W. Mellon Chair in the Humanities, and professor of African American and Diaspora Studies at Vanderbilt University in Nashville. And she's the author of the new book, My Black Country, A Journey Through Country Music's Black Past, Present, and Future. Alice, welcome to Due South.
It's wonderful to be with you and to be talking about this very important topic.
You know, this book is the latest in a long list of steps you've taken towards, you know, really raising black country music's historical profile. So why was this so important to write right now?
Well, I'll turn 65 in May, and I've spent 41 years in country music as a black woman professionally. And I fell in love with country music as a little child. So I thought I actually was going to turn 65 and retire from country music without ever having seen a black woman at the top of the country charts. Although that turns out to be not true with Beyonce's appearance on the top of the chart.
This ain't Texas. Ooh. Ain't no hold'em.
And I decided I wanted to write a book that was a celebration of the first family of black country that has sustained me on my 41-year journey.
Well, Beyonce has shut it down, hasn't she? She's definitely, you know, lifted up a genre that's always, you know, been there. You know, I have to, you know, I'm a black woman and I grew up, you know, in the South. But we always listened to country music and sang country music, mainly because that was kind of all on the radio. So you sang the few channels and stations that you could get down South. They were all country.
Absolutely. Ray Charles has recalled on an interview with Terry Gross that his mama would let him stay up late to listen to the Opry.
Mm-hmm.
I can point to 1838. Sometime around then, because that's when Frederick Douglass, in his second autobiography, he actually puts all the lyrics of a country song on in that autobiography. And we know that he heard it the year before he fled to freedom. And so that song appears in fragments, I believe, in the Bob Wills song, Take Me Back to Tulsa.
Where's that gal, the red dress on some folks called her Dinah? Stole my heart away from me way down Louisiana. Take me back to Tulsa.
So we can literally, I date the first country song, black country song I know, to 1838.
You know what? You've been doing this work a while, almost since you were born. You know, especially your songwriting, that you write that your father was a major influence in making sure that you knew the names of the many black country artists that history seemed to have forgotten. Tell me more about that.
Well, I was born in Detroit City in May 4th of 1959. I was born the same year that Motown Records was born in Detroit. And my family were not involved in the music business, but they knew a lot of people in the music business. Mm-hmm. So my father always knew and shared with me that Lil Hardin Armstrong had played on that big hillbilly hit. I don't know that he called it Blue Yodel Number 9, but that's the song it was. She was very much a part of the discussion of Black creativity when I was young. My father also pointed out to me that the banjo was an African instrument. And he's the person who said to me he thought traditional was probably a colored girl. That these songs that were called traditional might have been written by Black women. So, as I said, I grew up knowing that Black people had contributed to country music. Another thing in Detroit that you hear a lot about back then was A. Philip Randolph and the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, because they had that first wonderful union, Black union. In Detroit, we knew a lot of the sleeping car porters had been cowboys. And we know that the cowboys had their own song culture. And this is another Black root and inspiration for country music, the Black cowboys of the South and Southwest. Many people had forgotten that 20 to 30% of cowboys were Black and brown. That didn't get forgotten in my Black Detroit, partially because of Herb Jeffries, who in the 30s and 40s sang an entire series, created entire series of films as the Bronze Buckaroo. These were Black horse operas where they were Westerns with singing. And that was very exciting, too. So from early on, I came to start thinking of a first family of Black country, and that would be D. Ford Bailey, the Opry's first superstar, Black or white. Lil Hardin Armstrong, that was the mama and the papa. Ray Charles was their genius child in my imagination. Herb Jeffries, who was discovered by Lil in Detroit, was Lil's stepchild. And Charlie Pride, the second Black man to be on the Opry, was D. Ford's side child. That's how I saw the foundations of Black country.
You know, one thing I love about the way you've written this book is that, you know, each beat of your personal narrative is paired with a moment in Black country music history, and many of the artists that you cite, some you've just spoken about, are not necessarily artists we immediately associated with country music, like you mentioned Ray Charles and the Supremes, Roberta Flack, Bill Withers, my favorite, the Pointer Sisters.
They are not artists that are always associated with country music, but they are artists who've done extraordinary things in country and Western music. Ray Charles dropped in the early 60s an album called Modern Sounds in Country and Western Music. And that album deconstructed and reconstructed country aesthetically by the insight Ray Charles brought to the genre, who had listened to the Opry as a child, becomes a star in the world of R&B and jazz, returns to country, and reveals new possibilities in country and the skeleton of country's existing strength, which is Celtic, English, Irish, Scottish ballad forms and storytelling, plus Black aesthetics, plus evangelical Christianity. You put those three things together and you get country. You get the country that Ray Charles made. You get the country that sustained my aunt, Mary Frances. She loved that album, and one of her favorite songs on it was Bye Bye Love. She had lost a child in a house fire. And when Ray Charles sang that country song, Bye Bye Love, it took the sorrow she felt and it turned it in something too hard to bear, became bearable.
There goes my baby with someone new.
You know, we know a lot about, say, the erasure of Black musicians from country music history, but less is known about, say, Black folks like yourself, who've worked behind the scenes. In addition to being a songwriter, you also founded your first country your first country music production company, Midsummer Music, you know, when you were, you know, very young. So how important was that in helping you actually kind of spread the word, get published, to do what you have done so eloquently over the years?
For me, it was extremely important to found my own publishing company, which I founded in my early 20s in 1983, and that company still exists. It published Mark Sanders, who is now in the National Songwriters Association International Hall of Fame. It publishes a tiny bit of Garth Brooks at one time. Mm-hmm. Because it allowed me to control some of my own destiny and allowed me to support artists, writers who were trying to do some of the things that I was interested in doing, writing about the homeless problem, writing about religious hypocrisy, writing about environmental injustice, writing about, frankly, people being lynched in the American South. Starting my own country music publishing company allowed me to utilize my own agency and autonomy, both for my own good and for the good of others who are trying to complicate the stories that were being told in country music space.
Alice Randall is a veteran country music songwriter, a professor of African American and Diaspora Studies at Vanderbilt University, and the author of a new memoir, My Black Country, a journey through country music's black past, present, and future. We'll hear a bit more from Alice after the break. Then I'll be chatting with two artists who've devoted their careers to the study and creation of black Southern music. Rhiannon Giddens and Reese Palmer. This is Due South. Welcome back to Due South. I'm Leonita Inge.
You can't play in the big boys' world, dressed up in ribbons and curls, a stoplight and a grocery store. She knows that there's gotta be more.
Alice Randall continues to make her mark on country music. Her new book, My Black Country, A Journey Through Country Music's Black Past, Present, and Future, is getting a lot of attention, especially in Nashville, the city she calls home. The memoir includes an album, My Black Country, The Songs of Alice Randall. This is the first time she gets to hear her songs performed by black women.
While the boys were stealing bases and reaching for their dreams, small towns are smaller for girls.
It feels like a dream come true. It feels like Juneteenth, good news at long last. It feels like Sankofa looking back to move forward. I am so thrilled. All the songs in the album are songs I co-wrote, and they are songs that were recorded, some in the 80s, 90s, aughts, 10s, 20s. I've had songs recorded in all of these decades, but I'd never had any one of my songs recorded and released by a black woman until now. And now I've got Layla Michaela, and I've got Allison Russell, and I've got Adia Victoria, and Rhiannon Giddens, and Sonny War, Miko Marks, and all of these women, Shanti Rice and Monique Ross, who work together as sister strings. I've got Sania, which is my producer, Ebony's Discovery, Reese Palmer, Valerie June, and my own American girl, Caroline Randall Williams. This posse of black and brown genius rode to the rescue of my legacy, and I just adore it. I started off with an imaginary first family of black country, Dee Ford and Lil, Charlie, Herb Jeffries, and the great Ray Charles. But I've ended my career, or the summit of my career, is this family of choice that I co-live with in reality on the album.
There's some badass women on your album. And actually, just in case you didn't know, two of them, Rhiannon Giddens and Reese Palmer, will be talking to me really soon in this hour. I mean, I know you can't pick a favorite child, you know. But I wonder if there's a selection on your album that was remade that you're very partial to.
Well, I can't pick a favorite child, but so I will pick my child.
Okay.
My daughter, Caroline Randall Williams, a poet, she took on X's and O's, and it's relatively extraordinary. She riffs. Country is abidingly concerned with preserving and evolving. And this is an extraordinary example of evolution. And this, the producer of the entire album is Ebony Smith. This particular cut had a track, has a different producer, Dan Nobler, and he specifically sampled D. Ford Bailey. So because it has D. Ford Bailey and my own daughter, Caroline Randall Williams, I got a shout out to this one.
That's how she got strong, raised me in a house she paid for, put our life in a song, and it's X's and O's. Forever and ever now, ribbons and bows, and stay getting better now. Then the phone stayed ringing. The TV.
Go to work, make up, try to keep the balance up between love and money. She used to tie her hair up in ribbons.
I love every one of these cuts, and I am extraordinarily indebted to Ebony Smith, to Fiona Prine, the head of the record label, for coming together and making this Juneteenth for me. So, just extraordinary experience.
Well, definitely congratulations on your work. You know, I have to ask you, did you really stop writing songs after you wrote X's and O's? You know, after it was a big hit, Patricia Yearwood is.
Yes, if you read my book, My Black Country, I did really stop. And I started writing novels, and I have those novels have taken me to Durham at times. I wrote The Wind Done Gone. I have 5 published novels. My last one is Black Bottom Saints, which is about the Motown, about Detroit City as a music center, a global music center. But I did stop. And to know why, they're going to have to read the book.
Okay, definitely. And I didn't know you made it to Durham. That's good to know.
Yes, I have come to Durham on more than one occasion. And I hope that maybe I can come back with this book at some time. But I hope that many people in Durham will be listening to this music. And I am feeling like I am... You've got Rhiannon and Reese coming
on here.
So I want to get off so you have time for that and to play a bunch of this music on this show.
Yes. Well, thank you very much. Alice Randall is a veteran country music songwriter, a professor of African American and diaspora studies at Vanderbilt University, and the author of a new memoir, My Black Country, A Journey Through Country Music's Black Past, Present, and Future. Thank you so much, Alice.
Loving his heart and flowers in his hand, Johnny proposed to Sally Ann. Sally shivered as she said, I'll love you till the day I'm dead.
You're listening to Rhiannon Giddens singing The Ballad of Sally Ann, written by Alice Randall. This next tune is Reese Palmer singing Who's Minding the Garden, also written by Alice Randall.
There's a forest in Brazil, sheltered by the rain, where the tall trees made the air we breathe till the cattle barons came. They cleared the land for grazing, 50,000 trees a day. Now the Amazon's on fire, and that's progress, they say. But what a price to pay. Who's minding the garden?
Well, these tunes are on the new album, My Black Country, The Songs of Alice Randall. And the artists performing these songs are in the Due South studio with me today. Reese Palmer, a country music artist, songwriter, whose song Country Girl made Nashville take notice, stand up and take notice, right, when it hit the country charts. And Rhiannon Giddens is here, a two-time Grammy Award winner, a recipient of a MacArthur Genius Grant and a Pulitzer Prize. And if the world didn't know already, she plays a mean banjo. Welcome, ladies.
Hi.
Hey, Anita.
Oh, and I know you already know each other. Right. I was hoping to bring you together. I was like, maybe I can bring them together.
But we can tell people that's the origin story.
I know. Well, you know.
We met on Due South.
On Due South.
But I know, you know, badass girls like you, know, you got to know each other.
Yeah. But it's always great to have.
You were going to find each other if you didn't know each other, right?
It's always great to have an opportunity to rap, you know?
I know.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, she's a good one to rap with.
She's a good one to rap with.
Likewise.
Well, how did it feel recording these songs for Alice Randall? Reese, I know Alice has been a mentor to you for a long time.
Oh, my God. It was an honor. She's someone that I very much look up to and, like, hope one day I can look back on my career and see a lot of the same milestones that she's had. So it was a surprise whenever she asked. And it was an honor. And I was like, you choose the song, you tell me what you want me to sing, and I'll sing it. So.
But did you know her in your early days in Nashville when you were trying to, you know, get a foothold there?
I wish I did.
I know, right?
Wow. I wish I had. That would have made things a lot easier and a lot less confusing. No, I didn't meet Alice until, I guess it was like 2020, 2021. And she reached out to me, and I knew who she was, but she just cold reached out, and actually through Paul Worley, the producer, he was like, is it cool if I give Alice Randall your phone number? And I was like, yeah. And I had no idea what she was calling about, but we ended up just hitting it off. And you don't really have phone conversations with Alice. Alice just kind of tells you what's going on, and you're like, okay.
Oh,
yes.
She's the matriarch of all this right now. Yeah.
Yes. So it was ever since then, she's been an absolute blessing. Every time she calls, it's a blessing.
Wow. It's good to have somebody like that on your side. Somebody's looking out for you.
Absolutely.
And when I got a chance to speak with her, the one thing that I definitely feel that I learned is that she's been wanting to do this for so long. It just finally all came together, and it was timeless. She was like, you know, I'm in my 60s. I'm 65. Is, you know, if I don't do it now, when am I going to do it? So, Rhiannon, you know, this feels like the season for My Black Country. You know, Alice, she really calls this season Juneteenth.
Of course she does.
She calls it Juneteenth. She's like, you know, we're all free. We're all free now.
Yeah. I mean, look, the work that's been going on behind the scenes and outside of the mainstream spotlight is like massive. It's massive. There is no movement without movement. And there has been movement for years. So now when a mainstream spotlight shines, it shines on the stuff that's already been happening. None of this happened overnight. You know, My Black Country is 30 years of an experience, mm-hmm. you know, of her experience. Terrible experiences, some, you know, in Nashville, and like heard the history of just country music and Black people's role in it. And this album also is 30 years in the making. So it's like the fact that she was positioned at this moment in time, this stuff was already coming out. This has been in the works for, you know, over a year. And it's like that is serendipity. It's God. It's universe, whatever you want to call it, because what it has done is like she would have already been doing all of these things, but now she has a bigger platform to be in that spot to tell the real history, which is like a real blessing.
And that's what Alice pretty much said. She was like, well, I've been working on this forever. And then Beyonce. Then Beyonce puts her work out, which includes a wonderful ditty from you, Rhiannon.
I'm on there.
You're on there.
Mm-hmm.
Your phone has been ringing a whole lot more. I don't know. Your phone was already ringing, but it's been a lot, right?
I mean, the thing for me is I'm doing what I always do, which is if there's an opportunity to, you know, shine a light, to highlight, to spread the light, right? That's my thing. I'm like, great, I have this opportunity. Now, how do I, you know, tell the story that I know and foreground the people that I know have also been doing the work? And so this is a great opportunity, but it's just one in a series, you know? And it is one that has, you know, put my sound in the ears of mainstream Black culture in a way I never expected or thought would happen. And that has been a blessing for me. But as for the overall work, I just doing what I'm doing, you know? And it's like what Reese been doing, what I've been doing is what we doing now. It's just like, right. You know?
Well, Reese and Rhiannon, you know, I've known both of you for several years now, and I personally think you can sing anything. You know, you can perform any genre of music. I mean, you've been called folk singers, you know, maybe blues singers, rock and roll singers, a country singer. So I have to ask you, and that list, of course, can go on, but back porch music, all of that. But describe your perfect storm of music. I mean, what would you like to be known for now? You are, I don't know, I don't want to just place you where you are. I just think you're at a great point where you get to say what you want. You don't have to do what other people say you should do. So what do you say?
God, Leonido, you with the questions.
No, it was kind of long.
No. It's a great question. I would like to be known as... that's a great question. God. I mean, I guess like my perfect storm is like the songwriting is really important to me. And I think that's why it's taken me so long to finish this album that I'm working on now, because the songs just are so important. So I would like to be known as like a meticulous songwriter. I would like to be known as someone who brings all of her influences to the table. Like, I don't call myself a traditional country artist like I did at the beginning of my career, because I think it's other than that. Country's in there. There's also gospel. There's also R&B. There's also, I guess, you know, people call it Americana now.
Yes.
So if I had to put it in a basket, I guess I would call it Americana, because it's a combination of all of the root musics combined. There is blues, there is R&B, there is soul, there is gospel, there is country. So yeah, I guess Americana.
What's in your basket, Rhiannon?
I mean, I kind of resist. I don't even, like, I love how Yola says, what did she say, I'm genre fluid.
Yes.
I mean, that's really cool. I'm even, like, further away than that. I'm, like, a singer who plays banjo and fiddle. That's my music. I play acoustic music. It's just, like, because it could incorporate, I don't know, I just resist it. I mean, I understand Americana, and if you pin me to the wall and say, in the music industry, what are you, you know? But I just think about all those years where we just played what we wanted to play, and we were affecting each other so much. And, you know, Black string bands, you know, played everything that they were hired to play. They'd be playing Chinese music, they'd be playing Italian music, they'd be playing whatever. And I think that that's the pre-recording industry, like the years between emancipation and the 1920s, there's like magic.
I know.
In those years. And like, we'll never know what they sounded like, but there's a lot of stuff we can, you know, dig into and find out. And I kind of placed myself there, to be honest, in that kind of pre-recording era soup of acoustic music. That's me.
Where our parents and grandparents fought for us to be whoever we wanted to be, didn't they? And that's what we are. Yeah. And so this, don't laugh at this next question, because when I was young and wanted to be a journalist, I said, you know, I want to be like Norma Quarles. Like, I picked the newscaster that I wanted to be. So I wonder, who did you want to be, Reese? I mean, when you were young, like...
Who did I want to be?
Yes.
Real talk?
Yes.
I wanted to be Tina Turner.
Woohoo!
Like, so bad.
Wow.
I remember seeing her. I remember this vividly. Like, seeing the What's Love Got to Do With It video. And I was like, I don't know what that is, but whatever that is, that's what I want. Like, the hair, the makeup, the shoes, the outfit, just the vibes. Like, I wanted out whatever strong, sensual, gorgeous, like, powerful person that is, that's what I wanted.
You must try to ignore that it means more than that. Oh, what's love got to do? Got to do with it. What's love but a secondhand emotion? What's love got to do? Got to do with it.
Oh, that's good. I'll answer that. I don't know if I was like, I want to be like that person, other than maybe Ariel from The Little Mermaid. But when I was in middle school, there was a talent show. And so what did I choose to do? Like, it's not surprising, given my career. I chose to sing Last Night I Heard the Screaming, which is about domestic violence.
Oh,
which is a Tracy Chapman song. And I sang that for, you know, a cappella for my middle school talent show.
Did anybody applaud?
Oh, my God. For weeks afterwards, it was like annoying teenage boys going, yeah, I heard you screaming too. Oh, my God. Every time I saw him in the hall, it was horrific. But, like, that kind of tells you I was very into already, even at that point, deep songs, yeah. Songs that really had something to say. And, you know, but it is a scar on my soul.
My goodness. Well, I'm in the studio with Rhiannon Giddens and Reese Palmer, and we're talking about just about everything music, but definitely My Black Country, a new book and album by Alice Randall. Stay tuned for more. This is Due South.
Last night I heard the screaming, loud voices behind the wall. Another sleepless night for me, it won't do no good to call the police. Always come late if they come at all. Last night I heard the screaming, loud voices behind the wall.
You're listening to Due South on WUNC. I'm Leonita Inge. I'm here with Rhiannon Giddens and Reese Palmer, two popular musicians who have found themselves under an even brighter glow in the spotlight lately. Rhiannon was featured playing the banjo on Beyoncé's chart-topping country hit, Texas Hold'em. And both she and Reese Palmer are featured artists on the Songs of Alice Randall, a new anthology of country music written and performed by Black women. So, ladies, let's talk about history for a moment. We spoke with Alice Randall in the first part of the hour, and we talked about her work in uncovering Black country music history, something that both of you seem to be very committed to. You know, Reese, your podcast, Color Me Country, is named for Linda Martell, and who was, until recently, an underappreciated pioneer. And that podcast actually, you know, brought her name to the forefront in many ways. And you meant to do that, right?
Absolutely. I see myself a lot in her story. You know, if it weren't for technology and the ability to make music on your own, I would be just like her. So, and just for people that don't know the story, I'll give you a very quick synopsis. Mm-hmm. Linda Martell is the first Black woman to ever play the Grand Ole Opry. She, up until Beyoncé, was the highest charting Black female on the Billboard Country Charts. And that was in 1968 that she set that record. So that's how long it's been. And she was signed to a record company called Plantation Records that was run by Shelby Singleton. And he shelved her once Jeannie C. Riley came out with Harper Valley PTA and decided to go where the money was.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we should sing that one. We all do.
Yeah.
I love that song.
And she was blacklisted and left Nashville and went back to South Carolina.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, you know, and Rhiannon, you know, you've also devoted years to studying and amplifying Black folk and musicians and who have been lost in history. So are you both finding that your efforts are, like, paying off? And how big of a way right now, or are you just hoping for more?
Well, I like to say that, like, my focus has been up until the 20s, and then I kind of let Reese and Ellis take over. So, you know, once you get to the 30s and 40s, I start dropping off anything, any knowledge. I think for me, it's really important to recognize the people who've been doing this work. Like, for example, like you just said, Color Me Country, you know, Reese's been lifting Linda Martell's name in the true history of Black people and country music. Alice has been doing it. You know, there's been like Holly G and the Black Opry has been doing all this work. Brandy Pace, yes. Waller in Fort Worth with a festival dedicated to African-American acoustic music and country and roots. And so there's oddly enough, we're all Black women. Interesting. Anyway.
Kamara Thomas. With Country Soul Songbook, yep. Here in the Triangle.
That's right. So it's like there's a lot of people that have been doing this work. We have been doing it, and we will continue to do it once the dust settles and the spotlight sort of starts to turn, as it always does in pop culture, right? It's always a moment. It's never, you know, we want the moment to be subsumed into the movement, you know, and to like gather more people to the movement that we have already been trying to do in all the different ways that we have been offered, all the different opportunities. We always try to turn them into what does this mean for the movement, the mission, and the music?
And probably bringing somebody else up, right?
Absolutely. Can I, real quick, just mm-hmm. say two other names that we forgot?
Yes.
Dina Jennings Ross,
yes.
The Thing. And
Ross Jennings, I think.
Yes, Ross Jennings. Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, sorry. Dina Ross Jennings. And then Hannah Myrie and the, yes, Banjo Reclamation Project.
Yeah.
Remarkable. I think one person that, besides Linda Martell, Alice mentioned in her book, is DeFord Bailey? And that's not a...
DeFord, yeah.
Yeah.
He was the harmonica, yes, player. For,
yes,
yes,
not a woman, but that was a name that I wasn't familiar with, and probably was familiar with the sound, right?
Yeah, it was the first sound that back when Grand Ole Opry was a radio show. It was the very first sound that everyone heard was him playing harmonica.
Yeah, yeah, hey, take it, catch it.
You know. The Carolina Chocolate Drops that Rhiannon definitely helped found. You were the first Black string band to play at the Grand Ole Opry.
Mm-hmm.
And Reese, you have played at the Grand Ole Opry. It's almost unheard of. It seems like it should be normal, but it wasn't normal. And I just wonder if you could, you know, talk about, did you find that space welcoming to you by, you know, by this time in our history, you know, as being Black performers?
I mean, it was interesting when we played. I mean, the audience was there for it, you know, and there was all this focus on it. And this was a healing moment, they said. And I was like, healing for who? This is interesting. I think, you know, people are imperfect and I try to give people a measure of grace. You know, they're trying to do better with incomplete information, you know. And some people aren't, some people are, and you can tell the difference, you know, but some people are just being incomplete and some people are just being racist, you know, and there's a lot of just people who have incomplete information who are doing what they think is right. So I feel like, you know, that experience was largely positive, you know, but I've been back as a solo artist. I've sung Patsy Cline numbers. I've had, you know, comments in the section, like, you know, like it, what you would think. Like, so it's challenging. I find the mythology that's been spun around the Opry a little too much for me these days. I'm kind of like, it's just a stage.
It's just a stage.
And there's a beautiful history to it, and there's a rough history to it. But I think it's got this outsized space, you know, in what we're trying to do with country music. I don't know. I'm mm-hmm. I have a lot of thoughts. They're not really coherent.
Well, Reese, how was your time? I'm trying to think. I think I saw your performance in a documentary of some sort on PBS.
Yeah,
yes.
It was the opening of the American Masters doc. Mm-hmm. Which, shout out to Dilsey.
Yes.
No, it was, for me, at that moment, a really positive experience. Mm-hmm. They were very thoughtful in their reception of me. So, I've played. At this point, I've played it, I think, like 15 times. So, it was good. But I agree with Rhiannon. It's a very complicated history that the Opry has. And like the more you learn about the rhyming and all this kind of stuff, it's just like, ah, you know, it's like everything in the United States. Like everything has it's a quilt. Like there's a lot of pieces that go to it.
Well, we know country songs are storytelling songs. Really, all songs are. But, you know, that's what they say about country songs. And in Alice Randall's memoir, you know, she says that often listeners assumed the characters in her songs were white unless mm-hmm. the lyrics explicitly stated otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder, do you find that still true at all in your work? Like when you're writing, you know, are you writing for anybody in particular? Are you... I'm just saying,
no,
but Alice, yeah, because that's why Alice says she wanted you all singing on her album for one, you know.
Yeah, I laughed because I don't think I've ever thought about it because it's always me.
Yeah.
Like in some form, unless I'm writing about someone else explicitly, I just always think of these are my thoughts. Like this is my innermost thoughts. These are my feelings, whatever, unless I have given this person in the song or the story another name. So, I mean, I guess, yeah, all my songs are written from the point of view of a black woman because I'm a black woman. But, yeah, I don't think I've ever thought about it like that.
Yeah, that's super interesting. Like, I mean, I know I'm the opposite. I don't write from my perspective, but I'm always writing from black women's perspective.
Right.
It's just the historical nature of what I do. So I've seen, like, a white opera singer sing at the Purchaser's Auction. It was super interesting.
I bet.
It was super interesting. Like... I mean, ultimately, you want your songs to be interpreted by whoever is moved by them, right?
Right.
That's true.
But the knowledge of where it comes from, I think, is important. Just like every other song, you learn, you get an extra bit of information, you get extra understanding into why they chose this lyric over that when you know more about who wrote it, you know? But it shouldn't be the only thing that, you know, sells the song. Like, it should be you're drawn to the song, and then you get more information by knowing when it was written, who wrote it? In what context did they write it? Then it's just additional info, but ultimately there should be a core of something that calls you to that song. And it shouldn't matter what the color
right.
of the person is. You know, it shouldn't be, it shouldn't have to be explicit. You know, but the problem is that mainstream culture is so used to seeing themselves
right.
that they are expecting everybody else to put themselves into that character, and they don't have a lot of practice in doing it. So there's this conflict. You know, so we're very used to putting ourselves in a white man's point of view because we see that
all
the time.
That's
you know,
mostly what it's been.
You know, you read a book, you hear a song, and so like everybody should have the ability to do that. So the more people from different walks of life, from different points of view, who are writing things that people are hearing, it gives them the opportunity to practice empathy by putting themselves in somebody else's shoes.
Mm. I'm
and
here
they
with
need that practice.
Yes, we all.
Lord,
do.
Yes.
I'm here with Rhiannon Giddens. She's preaching a little bit here. And Reese Palmer. And we're talking about My Black Country, you know, the songs of Alice Randall. And they're on this this new album, old songs,
mm-hmm.
written by Alice Randall, but your kind of new interpretation, mm-hmm. reimagined. So I'd like to know, what are you ladies listening to these days? I mean, I don't know. I don't just listen to public radio. I turn to several stations to see what's going on and what tunes I might enjoy. But what are you listening to? What artists do you like these days and why?
So I'm in the middle of a record. And so I have like my musical vision board that I put together. And it's like Liz Wright, Ray LaMontagne, Carly Pierce, Phoebe Snow, a lot of Phoebe Snow.
Wow, I haven't heard Phoebe's name in a long time.
Phoebe is
I
like,
love Phoebe.
Phoebe's like my, I don't want to say spirit animal because that's not right, but she's like she's my person. Like that's my person.
Mm-hmm.
I feel a lot of kindred. I don't know why, but I just always have since I was a kid.
Baby, I'm yours. Her version.
Harpo's Blues is the thing. Like you won't make me cry. Like just play, yeah. And then, yeah, just people like Chris Stapleton, people like that. Like that's my musical vision board that I'm listening to now that keeps me kind of in the framework of the record that I'm working on right now.
When you're working on records, sometimes, you know, maybe you don't want to listen to other people. You may get confused, but instead, maybe not confused, but
yeah.
So you need, everyone needs some inspiration, but sometimes, you know, like sometimes when I'm writing, you know, you don't want to take other people's words necessarily.
No, 100%. Like for me, it was like, my life is so, I am so verbal on a regular basis, like from doing the radio show to like talking for talks that people hire me to do or hosting or whatever. So I have to listen to music in order to remind myself sometimes that you're a creative, like you're a writer, you're a singer. Just remember that. And these are the things you love. And so it's more so for like a, it's a spark. It's like a, it's a muse for me to remind me.
What about you, Rihanna? I heard you mention, did you say you were singing Patsy Cline sometimes?
Oh, yeah. That's, I mean, I love those songs. I listened to a lot of music for many, many years, just kind of constantly. And now I'm in a different phase, so I don't listen to music very much. I actually listen to podcasts. So, and they're all historical. I listen to Our Fake History. I listen to If Books Could Kill. I listen to You're Wrong About. Basically all debunking, let's debunk mythology and let's like learn the true history. And those have been, I listen to not just the Tudors. So I listen to a lot of different historical, just like I love to know how people used to live. I'm just really interested in that. And so it's either that or listening to my kids practice. Like that's a lot of, or I'm listening to stuff to do something, to prepare something, to, you know, to learn a song or whatever. But I find when I sit down and I go, oh, I just want to hear, you know, listen to some music, I actually just listen to silence and just kind of like live in my brain for a bit. I've just, that's the phase that I'm in. I know it won't last forever, but there's a lot of, you know, I'm working on a book. I'm working on, you know, there's a lot that's kind of churning up here. So I'm just kind of letting it churn.
And I know you're both extremely busy. So I really want to know what is churning, what's going on in 2024 for you right now?
Well, I'm hosting a series at Carolina Theater.
Right.
And that's actually happening on the 25th of this month. It's called Wavemakers. And it's an extension of Color Me Country. I get to introduce new artists to the area, to the Triangle. And people that I find to be extremely inspirational, like Gabe Lee is going to be on the 25th, and I'm very excited about that. I'm working on this record, raising my babies and trying to, you know, mind my edges and my business. Like, that kind of thing. Yeah, just working on a bunch of different things. But those are my three main focuses right now.
Hmm. Rihanna, your schedule. You're about to go on tour.
I'm about to go on tour. Season two of my music is coming out on PBS. I'm focusing on the American Railroad with the Silk Road Ensemble. So I'm very excited about that. I've got some albums that I'm working on. And then a book, which I, you know, I will be talking about later when I get closer to it's actually being done. But yeah, just doing the research and you know, picking up pieces of history and trying to make it all make sense. So that's you know, enough, I think.
That's enough. Well, thank you, ladies, for spending this time with me in the Due South studio. And really, just thank you for doing what you do.
Oh, my gosh. No, thank you for having us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Rhiannon Giddens is a folk musician and historian. Her latest album of all original compositions is You're the One. Reese Palmer is a country music artist and the creator and host of the Apple Music podcast Color Me Country.
It was black as the sky on the moon.
This is Due South. Due South is a production of WUNC and a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Our producers are Stacia Brown, Coldell Charco, and Rachel McCarthy. Denarius Thomas is our technical director. Aaron Kiever is our executive producer. Our theme music is by Quilla. For co-host Jeff Tabiri, I'm Leonita Inge. For more Due South, go to duesouthradio.org, download and subscribe to our podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen.